Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Crossing Routes podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined again by my good friend and co-host Tyler Rowe, and today we are going to sit down and unpack some ambiguous rosters. I recently came out with an article on www.ftnfantasy.com going through some of the more glaring roster holes remaining around the NFL, even after we've gotten through free agency and the 2026 NFL draft. There are still some team situations that just don't make a lot of sense. So Tyler and I are going to try and make sense of them in a recorded audio format. But before we get into that, of course, Tyler, how you doing?
Man, I'm doing good here, man. We've turned the page. FTN would call redraft season here, even though I still think it's a good mix of dynasty season, redraft season. Best ball is lighting up. We're having, you know, I don't know if we're having an affiliate here from the best ball side, but let's just say the main best ball sites are out here live with contests. So I'm in best ball rooms. I've done rookie drafts. I'm in a dynasty startup. The redraft leagues are cooking. The chats are back online. Football is close. It's not close, really, but it feels close. It's happening. Like, it's moving. It's got life. And that feels good, Herms. Even though we do this year-round, there's the outside. You know, it's you and I could do this all day. We do it every day. We do it every single week. But there's other people in my life that don't do this every single week that are now talking about football. And you know what? That feels good. It feels good.
Exactly. You know, spring is in the air. Hope always springs eternal, especially for the upcoming fantasy football season. Hopefully, everybody is going to do super well with their teams. But of course, you're going to if you're listening to this podcast. That is one of the places that you're going to get some pretty cool information, including how to unpack NFL backfields. There are some running back situations that are a little bit stranger than others. And the big one that I wanted to start our conversation off with is one that you and I have discussed on the show a little bit throughout the past couple of weeks, but we haven't really done a super big dive into. That would be the Washington Commanders, because they don't really have anybody who stands out immediately as like, oh, this dude is 100% going to be the big bell cow or whatever. And they have a new offensive coordinator who has never been an offensive coordinator before, who has never called plays before. And I did a bunch of research about it, and I have some things to tell people about it. But before we do that, I do just want to, you know, kind of ground the conversation by asking you first, what is your broad zoom out view of how this backfield is looking right now in DC?
We've talked about this before, right? And we said before the NFL draft, there's no way that the Commanders can walk into a season with Jacory Crosky-Merritt and Rashad White as their entire running back room, right? We said that. And technically, they did not. They went on day three and grabbed Catron Allen, who you had very positive things to say about at the Senior Bowl, who has had some pretty good tape, who is a talented back in his own right. You know, they didn't address it necessarily as strongly as I thought they would, but they did address it. So where does that kind of leave us? Now, I know they've got some other guys kind of sitting at the back of that roster. Personally, just to kind of like as like a, maybe a housekeeping item here, I'm not really concerned about Jeremy McNichols. I believe he's back. And then Jerome Ford would be the two guys that I don't think we really need to talk about here. I would say the conversation really leads me to Jacory Crosky-Merritt, Catron Allen, and Rashad White. Now, what's interesting here is none of these guys are going in the top 35, right? And the Commanders are, if healthy, would be a good offense. I would say above average at worst, likely good, maybe even great. So where does that lead us? This is a very ambiguous backfield. There's a lot of conversation around targeting these ambiguous backfields and how are we going to address that. I have a pretty, I wouldn't say two, but I have a more aggressive rank than ADP on Catron Allen to where you'd be landing him late in a lot of spots. Pretty solid fade on Jacory Crosby-Merritt, which makes sense. I don't think you can say, hey, I'm going to be, you know, I guess you can technically probably draft Jacory Crosby-Merritt and Catron Allen because they're so cheap, but, you know, planting a flag and taking a stand here, if I had to take one, it'd be Catron Allen. And then I do want some Rashad White as you kind of look at the landscape of the Commanders. And they are lacking a little bit in the pass catcher range. Now, we still like Terry McLaurin. I like Antonio Williams, who they added on day two, wide receiver out of Clemson. Chig is a serviceable, if not possibly underrated, tight end. But there, I think there's just some room here. I think Rashad White could deliver some PPR value. And if I'm going to take a swing at one of these lead options, I would probably be leading Catron Allen's way. Jahorie Grosby-Merritt was all right. But like at the same time, I think Jahorie Grosby-Merritt caught 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 balls last season. Mm. And Catron Allen, not known for his pass catching ability, but did catch 70 balls in college. So like he can do it. I wouldn't say it's a strength of his, but do I think that Catron Allen's a better pass catcher than Jahorie Grosby-Merritt? I do. So with that said, Rashad White probably having a pass catching role because at this point in time, that's probably his best bet to stick on a team and have an impact. Is I want to be mixing in Catron Allen and Rashad White throughout my team's late because you're able to do that. So probably wasn't a quick way of saying how I feel about the Commanders backfield terms. But that's generally where I stand. Want to turn it over to you as you've got a lot to say on this. And as somebody who's watched Catron Allen up close, would love to kind of hear.
Well, in terms of your read on the entire situation, I am completely with you. If I had to pick who my favorite target in this backfield would be, it would have to be Allen. Because one of the things that I had looked up for this article that I talked about at the beginning of the episode, took a look at some of the underdog ADP to get a vibe on what was going on for the best ball market. And yeah, like Catron Allen came in at RB58. And we look at the backfield, there's not a single dude besides Rashad White who was picked above round 5 of the NFL draft. And even then, Rashad White, former day 2 pick, obviously that sounds really nice, but he's like a $2 million 1-year deal. Like he's not there for a ton. So this really does kind of come down to, for me, just trying to figure out, well, how is David Blau going to run this offense as offensive coordinator? And who has the skill set that is probably going to translate best to that? So, long story short, one of the things that I did when I wrote an article last month trying to identify rookie landing spots for the running backs, I gathered and pooled a bunch of data from FTN stats and charting about the different team run tendencies and like how often teams do inside zone runs versus like man versus gap and blah, blah, blah. Because I tried to figure out how I could maybe predict what David Blau's offense would look like, but obviously never called plays before, so how do we really know? I had talked about something that I'd heard on the radio from a Commanders beat reporter in past episodes when talking about this, but I dug and I found an article from the team website where Jaden Daniels is actually kind of talking about what the offense could look like, because evidently he and Blau spend a lot of time talking to each other and are pretty collaborative on building out this scheme for the offense that's going to take place in 2026. And basically the big takeaway was that it was suggested some combination of Cliff Kingsbury air raid tendencies, Ben Johnson's sort of creativity, and Kevin O'Connell's West Coast scheme. Because one of the things that was mentioned in the article specifically was like, yeah, man, obviously, you know, he served for Cliff Kingsbury for 2 years on this Commanders coaching staff. It was his first coaching job ever after retiring from being an active backup quarterback in the NFL. But evidently the relationships that he had built with Kevin O'Connell and Ben Johnson when he was on the practice squad with the Vikings and the Lions made pretty big impressions. So I put together an amalgamation of the different tendencies from each of those offenses that we have in our database and kind of figured out just how that would compare to a lot of the other stuff that I pulled for that rookie landing spots article. And basically, the important thing is that in all likelihood, based off of all the evidence that I could find, they're probably going to do a lot of power running, and it's probably going to be very heavy with man and gap schemes, which means you're probably going to be leaning a little bit more on your hammer guy. That probably going to be either Jahorie Grosby-Merritt or Catron Allen. I'm definitely with you that there is some utility for Rashad White. I don't want to make it seem that like I'm just kind of ruling him out, because he definitely has some legit PPR upside. But like, I really think if they're going to run the kind of offense that I think they're going to, based off of the research that I did, the guy who's going to be doing a lot on the ground is probably going to be the one who takes the most work share and would I guess by extension, have the highest fantasy upside. So that was kind of a fascinating thing to me. I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, and great stuff there, Herms. And for me, I think a piece of this too is they didn't have much on the roster in terms of running back last year in the Commanders. JCM had every opportunity, in my opinion, to take some passing work and could not. And there wasn't a pass catching back on that roster as good as Rashad White last year. So from my perspective, it's just a tough bet. Like, even if you want to drum up the take that it's Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt over Ka'Tron Allen, which is a fair take to drum up, he's still not going to get the pass work over Rashad White, right? So what is the upside here? And then we haven't even addressed the elephant in the room, Herms, is that Jaden Daniels can rush around the goal line, right? And that's another piece of this too. So from my perspective, it's a lot to kind of unpack here, but I think you're right on the money. Ka'Tron Allen is, I think, ranked, you said, RB 58, 59. My last set of rankings had him at RB 48, so well ahead of the market, a place I would like to stay.
Oh, definitely. It's really good to try and take a look at some of this best ball ADP too, because obviously we're not going to get reliable redraft ADP for a little while. But, you know, this is the first look at the market that we really have for 2026, at least with all of the information post NFL draft and everything. So I would encourage listeners to just keep up with that stuff. Even if you're not doing best ball drafts, at least follow that stuff and try to identify some of these early values. There is another backfield, though, that, you know, I think the most that I had to say was definitely about the Commanders, so hopefully this one will be a little bit quicker. But the Green Bay Packers were a team that I had thought a lot about in the fact that after Emmanuel Wilson signed a free agent contract with the Seattle Seahawks this offseason, it left basically nothing behind Josh Jacobs. And I was looking into some of the numbers, and how important is the Packers RB2 really going to be? I'm not entirely sure, especially because Wilson saw the field on 28.9% of the Packers snaps last year, which like isn't a huge presence, but 8.8 touches per game was allocated to the running back not named Josh Jacobs. And I can't help but think, like, man, like, I don't know, in the right matchups, I think that could be a viable flex. I really think that we'll be able to extract value from this team, but the issue is I don't know entirely who it's going to be, but there's one name that I really want it to be. There's Chris Brooks, former UDFA. He's only ever had one game with double-digit touches. We don't know if he'd be any good if they gave him the ball all the time. And then, of course, there is Marshawn Lloyd. Injured constantly. He has only played in one career game since entering the league in 2024, but I don't know. I can get more into some of the reasons why, but I think he could be a pretty exciting guy. But my question to you is it really worth talking ourselves into Marshawn Lloyd again for the third year in a row?
So I'm all right with it because you don't have to spend any draft capital. It can be a name that you just click at the very end of your draft and just kind of hold him on your roster for a second. But I do think it's worth talking about and putting on people's radar, particularly if you play with, like, you know, 6-7 bench spots in redraft, or maybe it's a dynasty take, you're listening to this and someone wants to drop them or you can throw them as an add-in. The Packers, right, the offense, they are committed to the run. The fifth heaviest run team last year in 2024, the third heaviest in terms of just, hey, what percentage of their plays are run versus pass? Fifth heaviest run in 25, third heaviest run in 24. They're committed to pounding the rock down the middle, making defenses defend that, and then drumming up the pass for it. I know he can point to maybe Jordan Love's injury and Malik Willis to some of that as to why they're so pass run heavy, but I'm not buying it. I think they want to be a run-first team. I don't think there's a ton of meat on the bone here for somebody else. I know you noted there are some touches there. I think if everybody's healthy and Josh Jacobs is doing well, he eats into that a little bit more. But for me, Chris Brooks isn't really much of an NFL talent. I'm glad he's on the roster. Glad he's making a living for his family. But Marshawn Lloyd, to me, is still a good prospect. First, contact balance. He has the upside. He just can't stay on the field, and that's a problem. But for the price, being absolutely free on the league's most like run-committed offense, like, why not? I mean, the Packers roll on the ground. I don't expect them to shift away from that. It's part of their identity, and he's going to be absolutely free. heaven forbid something happens to Josh Jacobs, it's going to free like 20 to 25 touches a game. And even if Lloyd's only getting half of that, it's a good situation here, folks. So I think he's a, you know, I'm not rushing to grab Marshawn Lloyd and throw him on my team. But at the end of a draft, if you're trying to just load up on a couple high upside handcuffs, give him a shot. I don't think it's a bad shot. I think it's a very fine dart when you look at the team as a whole and their commitment to the run and the fact that it's not Lloyd is a bad runner and his talent keeping him off the field. It's just injury. So that would be my kind of thoughts on it. And here we are, year three, going back to the well like fools. But I'll do it every time. I'll do it every time.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, you're a former third round pick in the NFL draft. And, you know, I bring this up all the time, but he was another one of those Senior Bowl guys. And the things that really stood out about him were the fact that his acceleration is nuts. Like he's a pretty fast dude. And also, even though he didn't do it a ton in college, he was very, very good at doing receiving stuff in pass catching drills. I think it's a pretty underappreciated aspect of his game. And yeah, because he's been hurt so often, I think a lot of people maybe just aren't even bothering to think about him anymore. Cause it's like, oh, it's the guy that's always hurt. But hey, you never know. 2026 could be a different year. And hey, that kind of speed on 8.8 touches per game, hypothetically, could be something fun. So just remember those names. And we are going to take our commercial break. Yes, that's probably the smart thing to do here. We are going to come back on the other side and talk about some wide receiver situations that are a little bit weird and maybe have some value to extract from. But don't go anywhere. This is the Crossing Routes Podcast. Be right back.
Hey, everyone. C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes Podcast. Watching sports is a very fun thing to do all by itself, but sometimes it can be even better when you have a little bit more on the line than just your regular rooting interest, if you know what I mean. But if you don't live in a state that has a sports book, how are you supposed to get in on all the action? Well, thanks to our friends at Novig, America's number one sports prediction market, people in over 35 states now have unprecedented access to all of the hottest plays around the world of sports. Better yet, if you sign up and make a minimum $5 purchase with code FTN at checkout, not only will you get to join in on all the Novig fun, but we will email you a promo code for a free month of a GOAT subscription for free. That's right. Unlock our top flight subscription that gets you all of our premium content, betting models, and expert picks across the world of sports. If you've ever wondered what an FTN GOAT subscription would be like, this is a great way to find out. So all you got to do is go to Novig.us or download the Novig app. Give them all the information they're looking for, make a minimum $5 purchase, but make sure to include that code FTN at checkout to get in on the Novig fun and unlock a free month of our GOAT tier subscription for free for an entire month. Seems like a pretty good time if you ask me. So go ahead and sign up for Novig, America's number one sports prediction market.
And welcome back, everybody, to the Crossing Routes Podcast. This is still Herms. He is still Tyler O. And we are still unpacking some ambiguous NFL rosters for 2026 fantasy football purposes. We really got to dig in and figure out what the heck is going on with some of these teams, because the answers are not always super obvious. And I think probably the number one example of this for pass catchers in the entire NFL has to go to the Las Vegas Raiders. So this is the second year in a row for FTN that I have done these kinds of, you know, positional hole articles. And typically I will write one before free agency and then, you know, right before the NFL draft. And then I will have this third one after everything has already gone through. And most of the time, you know, teams who may have appeared in the first one will either figure it out by the time I do the second one or at the very least third. The Raiders did not add any pass catchers for their rookie quarterback, Fernando Mendoza. It's ridiculous. I could go on a rant about that all day, but I want to hear from you now that we've seen them do basically nothing. There's still Brock Bowers, which is great, but are there any names that we should even care about when it comes to Raiders pass catchers?
I think care about is an interesting thing for me because it's more so like they're so cheap. The answer to me is like, why not? right? That's to what it all comes down to, is like, why not? So let me just kind of break it down. You did a really good job. This is where I'm at with the Raiders. Obviously, this offense is going to operate through Brock Bowers and Aston Jeet, right? That's more than fair. But in the end of the day, you probably aren't giving Bowers more than 30% of the target share. Probably, I mean, aren't giving Jeet more than 20%. So it's incredibly, say 50% of the target share goes to Jeet, and Bowers is a bit of an exaggeration, but let's just say technically it does. There's going to be a 50% target share for probably all the other wide receivers, right? And if we think this team is taking a step forward, which I think they are, they added Tyler Lindebaum at center. Obviously, they're bringing in Fernando Mendoza at quarterback. I think things are heading in the right direction. There is opportunity at the wide receiver position. Where does that leave us? To me, it goes to three players. You're looking at Trey Tucker, who had a couple boom games last year, but that was really about it. Jalen Naylor, who's shown some promise in Minnesota, but again, like, you know, it's kind of more been a rotational backup guy. And then second-year player, Jack Besh, TCU, second-round pick also by the Raiders here. So, you know, what direction does this kind of land us in? Personally, you know, like, I guess before I go personally, you would see it go Naylor, then Tucker, then Besh in terms of the ADP we're seeing in best ball. Obviously, that's super late, but Naylor, Tucker, and Besh. I'm fading Naylor for the most part. I think Tucker's interesting to be taken kind of late, more of a best ball pick. But Jack Besh is the name that I think that interests me as kind of a late round wide receiver flyer. Was not a fan of his as a prospect. Had no idea what the Raiders were doing, taking him in the second round. Completely faded him in year one, and that was a W. But now we're back in year two, and he's free. You don't have to spend anything to get Jack Besh on your team. He can play in the slot, and that is not where Trey Tucker plays. Not to say Jalen Naylor can't play in the slot, but typically I don't expect to see that. So Jack Besh to me is a player that we're probably going to see in two wide receiver sets, especially the Raiders are probably going to want to roll Brock Bowers and Michael Mayer in some heavy sets there. Because Mayer is a good tight end. I mean, he's a backup tight end, but he's a good tight end. So it makes sense that they roll Bowers and Mayer, and Mayer's in line. Ashton Jinty's in the backfield, and then you're rolling either Tucker or Naylor and Besh in the slot. So from my perspective, I expect him to be on the field a bit. I don't necessarily believe in the talent, but if the snaps are there, there should be opportunity. And if Mendoza is, you know, the quarterback that we think he is, crazier things have happened, Herms, is all I'm saying. So not to like sit here and have a conversation around, you know, deep cuts, which is kind of naturally what this is turning into in a way. But Jack Besh, I guess I'm a bit of a fan right now at cost after taking a step back and looking at the Raider situation.
No, and I think you hit on something that is really crucial, and the fact that Michael Mayer is also there and also a very good tight end, because new head coach Clint Kubiak coming over from Seattle, that offense put an obscene number of tight ends on the field. Like, that was very heavy packages was kind of a hallmark for that whole thing. So, and you're definitely right in terms of the people who would get out there in those two receiver sets, it's going to be Besh over Naylor, just simply by virtue of the fact that, like, Naylor's kind of a small dude. Besh is a large dude that can actually do some blocking. That would be a much better use of, you know, physical resources. That was a weird way to phrase it, but, you know, I think that definitely makes a lot of sense. So, definitely a name that people should be paying a little bit more attention to, especially for deeper leagues, probably not so much for, you know, shallow, you know, 10 team formats or anything like that, but always good to figure these sorts of things out. One of the other team situations that you had mentioned that I think is very fascinating to talk about is with the Kansas City Chiefs, because here's the thing. We saw Travis Kelce re-sign. I think he's going to be around for a little bit longer. And obviously they have Rashee Rice. After that, Tyler, is anything clear when it comes to pass catcher?
Nah, man, not even at all. So here's where I stand. Mahomes is still an elite quarterback. He's getting slept on right now in all the ADP that I'm seeing. Mahomes has traditionally been an absolute just rock star. I mean, it's crazy that I have to sit here and like have this conversation. Maybe if you're listening to this, you're like, Tyler, people aren't doing that. Yes, people are sleeping on Mahomes. People have him ranked outside the top 10 in a lot of different places. I mean, from my perspective, he had a down year in 2024. He was QB 11 last year, but he missed multiple games with that injury. Like, he was, I believe, the QB 2 up until he got hurt. Yeah. Before that, he had been, you know, QB 1, QB 7, QB 4, QB 4, QB 1 in terms of his finishes. He's only age 30. And more importantly, not only is he elite and one of the best quarterbacks in the league, the Kansas City Chiefs are extremely pass heavy. Last year, top 8, I believe, in pass rate, top 10 the year before, right? No matter how you cook this up, the Kansas City Chiefs are a pass heavy team. That's an Andy Reid feature, in my opinion. That's not, I don't think because they have Kenneth Walker, all of a sudden they're going to turn into the Packers and pound the rock every time. I do not think that's going to happen. I think they're going to continue to pass the football. Kelsey's probably going to still get his a bit. Rasheed Rice is still going to get his a bit. But one thing I think we know right now is that Xavier Worthy has not taken advantage of his opportunity terms.
No.
So we're looking at Xavier Worthy. We're looking at Tyquan Thornton, kind of one-trick pony. I believe they took Jalen Royals last year, who only had a couple snaps. They took Cyrus Allen, I believe, in the draft. And there's just a opportunity here for a wide receiver to step up. And, you know, before I kind of get into my thoughts here, and I'll be honest, I don't have a strong take here yet on the depth chart. I have ideas, but I don't have a strong take. I did want to kind of pass it your way. I guess first, are you kind of seeing the future of the Chiefs offense operating as I've said? And do you, have you put much thought into what could be going, you know, besides Rice? Because Rice and Kelsey are both short mid-area of the fields. Like, are they going to attack the outside of the field and with who? So before I kind of get my thoughts together in terms of, you know, is there a wide receiver I'm targeting, what are your kind of thoughts on the Chiefs in 2026 and how this offense operates?
I have thought about it a little bit just because, you know, Matt Nagy leaving to, you know, go elsewhere, link up with the New York Giants, it left room for Eric Bieniemy to return to the throne of being the offensive coordinator in Kansas City. And just kind of thinking about like what some of those offenses were like really early on in the Mahomes run when they were first winning a lot of the Super Bowls and doing all that stuff. And I thought about this because of the NFL draft grades article that I came out with. And when I got to the Chiefs, I was like, Cyrus Allen's kind of interesting. He was a Senior Bowl guy. One of the things that I really enjoyed watching him specifically was, especially in like red zone situations, I think he got up and really targeted balls very well, but he's a fast dude and he got pretty good release. And I keep thinking about those old Chiefs teams and like, obviously Tyreek Hill was there. I'm not going to try to predict who's going to be Tyreek Hill because that's ridiculous. But I think there's room for somebody to be kind of like what Mecole Hardman did for the team for a good while there and being able to attack downfield. Like, cause I remember that was always a really cool, like depending on the matchup, that would be something you could hammer in DFS because Mecole Hardman would be cheap enough. But if the corner matchup was weak, like whatever, and it would pay dividends more often than not. I think if you go look up Mecole Hardman's stats, like they're not eye popping, but there are some seasons that aren't terrible. And Tyquan Thornton, like you're right, one trick pony, definitely. He pretty much just is going to go downfield and try and use his blazing speed, and that's about it. But I guess if they return to kind of the OG Bieniemy stuff, I would want to maybe focus on whoever that person might be. But I'm also a little bit worried that that would be fishing for a big play monster. Yeah. So I don't know. It's tough, but like that's kind of the closest I've gotten to an opinion, I guess.
No, I mean, I'm with you, Herms, because like it's tough because everyone listens to these podcasts and, you know, we're doing this, talking about football, and everyone expects us to have like a really strong take. And I'm not sure I really have one yet here for the Chiefs wide receivers. I kind of want to see how things start to unfold. I do think there is some value there. I'm interested to see the drum beats and see the direction things are generally heading as we kind of get closer to the season. But I guess really what I want to leave the listeners with is there's probably going to be some opportunity outside of Rasheed Rice. And just to pay attention to that, because Mahomes is still elite and this is a passing offense. And there's going to be something there and some meat on the bone outside of the aging Kelsey and Rasheed Rice. So excited to kind of see what direction things go over the next couple of months. Is it something I'll be monitoring quite closely?
I think if there is going to be somebody who emerges from this offense, I want to know who it is and I want to be able to draft them, because if we can get back to that OG Chiefs vibes, then like, yeah, dude, it's going to be pretty sick. I think that offense could be very fun in 2026. But before we get out of here, there is one more that I wanted to get through with you, because when I was writing this article, I was not actually prepared to end up having the take that I did by the end, but I am pretty sure there is a realistic chance that the Josh Downs thing is never going to happen. I hate it. but I'm going to run through it very quickly. The whole situation with the Colts, like Michael Pittman getting traded to the Steelers, whole thing, it leaves this opportunity and people are like, oh, sick. Okay, so Josh Downs can do the thing now. He's finally going to be able to consolidate the target share. It's going to be him. It's going to be Alec Pierce. It's going to be Tyler Warren. It's going to be a great, big, fun time. Everybody's going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya. The Colts ran 11 personnel, which for, you know, listeners who may not know, that is three wide receiver sets. You're going to go out on the field, you're going to run a play, and you're going to have three wide receivers out there. They did that 62.8% of the time last year, which was the 12th highest rate in the league. And, you know, that's a good thing. That means that there is going to be plenty of opportunity for Josh Downs to be out there, because typically slot receivers are really only doing a ton of stuff in three receiver sets. But in two receiver sets, how does Michael Pittman Jr. leaving help him exactly? Because I was looking at it. I was, I guess, a little bit surprised they didn't sign anybody to replace Pittman, but I kept looking at it. I looked at the depth chart and I was like, damn, we're really going to see Nick Westbrook-Ikhine in 2026 lining up on the field a lot for the Indianapolis Colts, aren't we?
I wouldn't surprise me, man. I'm here to get excited about Josh Downs. I'm here to, I mean, I've seen people trade like their late first for Josh Downs on Twitter during the rookie draft. And I'm just like, I like Josh Downs, but I don't think you're wrong, Herms, as I've had Josh Downs. I have Josh Downs on multiple teams and I want it to happen, but I'm not necessarily certain that it is. And I think you're right on the money, dude. I don't want to steal your thunder, but like, you know, as you know, as somebody who does read your articles, what's the reason? Tell the listeners, like, why is Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, you think, going to be out there a little bit more than Downs? Because I'm with you. I have some thoughts, but I think you dove into it remarkably well.
Okay, so, I mean, he's a pretty big dude. And kind of like we were talking about earlier with Jack Besh, if you're going to be put out there in two receiver sets, you need to be able to block on the outside. I just don't see Josh Downs really doing that. He's, I think, 5'9". He's primarily ran out of the slot in his entire career. And when I was looking into it, I mean, like, he's recorded a career 64.3% snap share. It's just, it's hard to get on the field if that is really the only thing that you can do. And like, the physical limits just aren't a thing with Nick Westbrook-Ikhine. He's a huge dude. And he's also, it's never been like a huge thing before. Obviously, he's only ever had one season that was super consequential for fantasy purposes. And even then, I'm talking about a guy that you could plug in as a flex because he scored 9 touchdowns with the Titans in 2024. Mm-hmm. But he has handled close to a 10% target share in like 3 or 4 seasons in his career, either like a little bit below, like 9 point something. And then there was like one season that was his best, that 2024 season, at 10.3. And then I was looking at, so obviously the three receiver sets and everything, but then the fact that you just look at the target distribution on the Colts last year. And if they run it back and they cast everybody in the roles that make sense for them, the range of individual target shares among those top 4 guys in Indy last year, the low man at 14.6, that was Alec Pierce, and the top earner only got a 19.4% target share. Everybody was in between that window. Like, that's a pretty frustrating thing. So, like, not only are we going to have to worry about Downs from the standpoint of when he's going to be on the field to begin with, but then the fact that it's very even distribution. It is very even distribution to the point that I'm just like, man, how is he supposed to improve upon that? The guy who scored the most points per game was Alec Pierce, and that was 15.2. The fact that they're spreading it around this much limited it to begin with anyway. So, like, I don't know. Westbrook-Ikhine just makes too much sense to be the guy that's going to be out there all the time. Over to, I hate it. I think it stinks. I guess the only thing that I would tell people to, you know, kind of pick your chin up a little bit when it comes to Downs, if you're a big Downs believer, is the fact that he hits free agency at the end of 2026. He might be able to escape this purgatory very soon, but I don't know, man. It's tough. But let's say they do give some sort of, like, if they keep the vibes running the same, Shane Steichen tries to do the same thing, Daniel Jones gunslinging, throwing the ball all the time, if Nick Westbrook-Ikhine gets like a 12-14% target share, do you think he might actually be pretty good?
I don't know, man. I mean, he's traditionally had to have touchdowns to be able to have any kind of value. I think this is more of a, hey, Josh Downs is being an overdrafted conversation than, hey, Nick Westbrook-Ikhine is going to be somebody to target. That's kind of where I'm landing on this one, where I think Downs is being a little overdrafted, and it's not about targeting Ikhine later. It's just more about, hey, maybe we need to look under the hood here and not be rushing to grab Downs because we assume he's going to play in front of Ikhine in two wide receiver sets. That's the take I'm taking away from this one, Herms.
Fair enough. That's the big thing that I really hope people, you know, hear. Because like, I want Josh Downs to be a thing, too. Mm-hmm. I do. I've been rooting for that. I wrote an article for the site last year about it.
We talked about it a lot. We loved it. Yeah, I mean, we're all about it. I mean, I think we have to look at those mistakes, though.
Man. But I will say, though, that is the really fun part about doing this stuff. That's the really fun part about doing all the research for these articles and for these podcasts and being able to do these shows with you, Tyler O. That's how you transition out. That is how you wrap up another episode of the Crossing Routes podcast. We will return in 1 week's time with another show talking about something else that has to do with fantasy football for 2026. But until next time, I'm Herms. He is Tyler O. And we are saying goodbye.
Think about it before we go, just to say goodbye. And staying up and sleeping late.